Hello, today is Thursday, August 16th, 2018. I'm Joe Schmidt with TC2, and this is Staying Connected. Today's podcast is part of our podcast series, Staying Ahead of the Demand for Network Cost Savings. In this series, we've been revealing useful strategies to help enterprises achieve continuous network cost improvement and deliver world-class network infrastructure. I'm joined today by Mark Sheard, Managing Director of TC2 UK, and Andrew Brown, Managing Partner of LB3, and Andrew is also the Chairman of TC2. We are going to talk about the hot topic in network services today, software-defined wide area networking, or SD-WAN. I think most of us at LB3 and TC2 believe that SD-WAN is going to be a significant transformational solution in the networking space. So today, we'll share some practical advice for developing your SD-WAN or your internet-first strategy. Okay, guys, thanks for joining me. And Mark, let me start with you. You've been a big advocate for our clients to begin their planning for a move to SD-WAN. Can you introduce the subject to our listeners and then provide a quick background on SD-WAN and what some of the benefits are of its adoption?
Yes, I can, Joe. Thank you very much for that. First, get excited about SD-WAN. It's the near-term future of networking. It's a big change from MPLS, you know, the status quo that we've all become used to. It is, however, based on fairly established technologies brought together in a much, much more accessible way. But what is also happening is that providers now are embracing this and enhancing their market offerings all the time as enterprise take-up of the technology and the solutions accelerates. I'm not going to do an SD-WAN 101 here, but essentially, it's an edge solution. So where you have a software instance at all the connected sites, and those are used to create a virtual overlay, a network between those sites, which is based on the WAN's network transport underlay, the physical circuits. We call it WAN transport. Many names are used. The on-site instances are managed by centralized orchestrators. Now, there are various names for these, but basically, this is the brains. These reduce the complexity at the edge. They allow much more rapid reconfiguration of the overall network. They allow quicker and lower effort in terms of standing up sites. In fact, you'll hear the term very quickly once you start looking at SD-WAN. Zero-touch provisioning is a benefit of SD-WAN. That's all about quicker provisioning with less effort. And the increased separation between the overlay and the underlay releases the potential to use lower-cost circuits, particularly in place of MPLS. So this is where we are going to be relying on internet transport, either dedicated internet access or business broadband. And this can result in significantly reduced network transport costs. So SD-WAN is all about giving better network alignment with your business applications. And it does just that. It has much greater network visibility of those applications. So while the cost savings are critical, at least to most business cases I see, other extremely attractive benefits include enhanced performance through rapid failover between circuits or paths, easier aggregation of available bandwidth to give you much more flexibility, much more effective tuning of policies and prioritization to your application needs, and also vastly improved visibility and network analytics.
So, Mark, I mentioned you and I think others of us, we've been strong advocates for enterprises taking a proactive approach to developing an SD-WAN strategy. So what are some of the issues that you've seen that an enterprise needs to address in an SD-WAN strategy? And, well, I guess, where would they start?
Well, first thing, don't be put off by the perceived enormity of the task. Some people say it's very simple, it's actually relatively complicated, but it's still eminently doable. There are a couple of key areas where it makes sense to start, and most companies then build their strategy from there. First thing is to assess what you hope your future network will become. You'll need to model this at some point in the future to understand the SD-WAN and future transport costs. Ideally, you want to do this before you've committed to a five-year SD-WAN provider deal, and that's not as uncommon as you might think. And ideally with some competition on the available solutions. You also want to consider what is your start point in terms of capability and appetite operationally for an unmanaged versus a managed SD-WAN solution. A decision here sets you down different paths with respect to the providers that are able to fulfill your needs. Another thing to do is to take a very realistic view of your SD-WAN knowledge, the timeframes to implement and your ambition, and the resources required to drive this forward. It's not as straightforward as the marketing suggests. Come up with a high-level plan for action, which for large enterprises certainly should involve some early pilot programs to inform and develop your SD-WAN knowledge and thinking. And finally, think through the parallel activity, you know, your game plan for the changed mix of transport and the suppliers that go with it.
Let me just jump in here and add a point to Mark's list. It's really important early on in this process to figure out what your obligations are with your current provider or providers if you have more than one. We've actually seen some companies encounter real problems with their plan transitions when they get too far down the road. When they don't fully evaluate what their obligations are with their current provider, they'll go through whatever process they've gone through to move to a new solution. Sometimes it's a little rushed and overly focused on very optimistic models of cost savings based on ripping out 3/4 of their MPLS circuits or whatever, replacing them with cheap internet circuits. But then they find out that they can't just rip out those MPLS circuits or existing internet access circuits with their current providers and without incurring significant termination charges.
So you mean they can't do that because they have a bunch of individual circuit commitments?
Yeah, it can be individual circuit commitments on existing circuits, some of which are long and require a customer to pay termination charges for pulling them out early. So if you plan to transition to internet circuits, but you still have to pay for 20 months of charges on some MPLS circuits, it's going to cost some money. It can also be larger overall revenue commitments that haven't been met in the deal, or there might be other components of your existing deal that prevent you from moving away without incurring significant costs. And all this is true, by the way, even if you're transitioning to an SD-WAN service provided by a current vendor. Customers sometimes rely a little too heavily on so-called technology transition clauses, which often don't really provide that much protection to customers if they move to a different service or technology with the same provider, if that new service or technology lowers the existing provider's revenue. So I'm just making the point that Mark has laid out a long strategy, and as part of that, you need to know where you're coming from in your existing deal before you implement it.
So Mark, Andrew, he just raised the issue of getting SD-WAN transport from an existing provider versus going to market and getting it from another provider. So what are your thoughts on that as part of this SD-WAN strategy that we've been talking about? Is this transition something that lends itself to an RFP process? And if it is, how is it different from a traditional transport RFP?
Okay, first, let's draw the distinction between the SD-WAN solution and the underlying network transport, the MPLS, internet, business broadband, LTE connections that we mentioned earlier. As of today, the network transport is where the savings are going to come from. It's going to cost you for your SD-WAN alongside that. For that transport, the focus is about getting the right suppliers for the internet transport and the residual MPLS. For internet transport, we're increasingly seeing enterprises working towards models with a portfolio of suppliers that can be a mix of tier one carriers, the newer transport aggregators, and some specific exceptions based on certain geographies. South Korea might be a great example there. Generally looking at 5 to 7 suppliers to give reliable and competitive global coverage. An RFP is the way ahead here. If you're not going to end up with a significant premium on your aggregate circuit charges, you do really need to make this a competitive process. The mix varies from enterprise to enterprise based on geography and bandwidth need. So you'll have a different mix of suppliers. The SD-WAN solution doesn't have to come from the network transport providers. If you want a DIY and managed solution, the two elements are separate. For some managed service providers, they only give you an option to take the transport, e.g. Ariaka. For the main traditional carriers, they can generally provide the SD-WAN managed service solution separately, but obviously would also dearly love to bundle it with the transport. Typically, the result, though, will be much higher overall transport costs. So be wary of slipping into an incumbent-only offer here. For SD-WAN, in an ideal world, we see that the most effective way forward is to run an RFP plus exercise, which helps flesh out your requirements while getting hard, firm pricing insights that will allow you to select a couple of suppliers for a pilot program based on real sites. This is a competitive process, but initially has a higher exploratory element than it might do in your typical RFP.
Okay, so Andrew, it's part of the RFP process, or at least at the end of it. Enterprises, they have to get to a final contract for the services. So do the agreements for these services look different than traditional transport provider agreements?
Yeah, they can. And let me just underscore the first point you made, which follows from Mark's point, which is that getting the contracts negotiated and finalized should be really part of the RFP or RFI plus process, while you still have competition in the mix. Finalizing the contracts is not something you just do at the end of the process as cleanup. It needs to be integrated into the process and then flow naturally from it, particularly for these kinds of services. And the contracts for SD-WAN do and should look different even if you're getting these services from a legacy provider, so you'd have to make changes to your existing contract. If it's a managed service, you're going to need to include a fairly comprehensive SOW describing what the provider is going to be doing and, of course, what they're not going to be doing. Providers don't love doing this with you as part of the process. They just want you to trust them to just deliver the service. But, of course, you can't just trust them because you probably don't see eye to eye on what they're supposed to do for you. So a good SOW on a managed services deal ultimately is about money, yours. So it's definitely worth the time to get that part right. And if you're doing a large purchase of broadband circuits as part of your transition, and you're doing it through an aggregator on the transport side to support your SD-WAN solution, that aggregator is going to be flowing through a lot of terms from providers that they contract with over the last mile to your corporate facilities. Some aggregators will provide an overall wrap around the T's and C's and maybe even some service levels, but sometimes you just end up with a hodgepodge of whatever the last mile internet providers give into the aggregator. So you need to know what you're getting or agree that the aggregator is going to step up to a minimum set of terms and get that from the provider as part of your contract negotiation.
Yeah, my thinking aligns with Andrew. It's very much about, you know, I'm an advocate of moving this forward and not getting bogged down in overanalysis. An SD-WAN RFA plus and an internet transport RFP can be initiated early with a lot of potential upside. For SD-WAN, this can rapidly expand your knowledge with a robust review of providers while kicking off pilots to give hard experience in your environment and in parallel, better position you to close down with the provider of choice. And for internet transport, you can establish a portfolio of cost-effective suppliers who, before you have all the demand, who will progressively support you as your network transformation with SD-WAN is rolled out.
Okay. Thank you, Mark, and thank you, Andrew. You know, I guess we really just scratched the surface on the potential of SD-WAN for the enterprise, but I think this has been a great discussion, and you guys have offered up a lot of really good insights and a lot for our listeners to consider. So for our next podcast in this Staying Connected series, I'll be joined by my TC2 colleagues, David Lee and Brent Knight, and we'll be talking about unified communications. Now, you see, it isn't a new subject in the enterprise space, but it is still a huge driver in network transformation initiatives. So please look out for messages from us providing links to the latest podcasts or simply go to our websites. And finally, if you, the listening audience, would like to learn more about best practices for ICT procurements, or maybe you'd like to discuss other ICT needs with Mark, Andrew, me, or any of our LB3 and TC2 colleagues, please give us a call or drop us an email. And you can also stay current by checking out our websites or follow us on LinkedIn.